Welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
All right, so we'll get started from earliest childhood memories. What are we getting into as a kid?
Oh, earliest childhood memory would probably be, I don't know, playing hockey. Like I grew up playing hockey. I don't honestly remember when I started skating. It's just kind of something that I've always done, which is kind of how I got into the athletic world. But, you know, I remember skating around the roller rink, ended up getting into ice hockey whenever I was in like third grade.
So are we in Minnesota, Canada? Is hockey prevalent?
Oh, no. I'm from St. Louis. So, like, it's not hockey town by any means. My dad just played, and so I have forever. I ended up taking that into, ended up playing in college, ended up with a scholarship in college for that.
We'll get into the college part, but we start playing third grade. Was there any other sports? Did your dad have you out on the rink or whatever it is? Like how did that kind of take place?
Honestly, I think it was because my brother was playing. So I've got an older brother, and you know, whenever he started skating, I was like, oh yeah, I'm totally going to do that. And my dad had him in skates, you know, before he could walk pretty much. So I think that they said that it was like 18 months that my brother started skating. They at least waited a little bit longer for me.
I have what is today? Today's the 26th. So
26.
Tomorrow she will be 5 months. So I'm like, all right, what are we going to get you into? I saw some kid on Instagram pushing a sled. It was like 75 pounds at like a year old. I'm like, what is going on here?
Goodness.
We'll work on it. So yeah. Dad's got you early in skates, cracking the whip. Was it friendly competition? Were you always fighting with your brother?
Early on, it was not so friendly. So we had a unfinished basement, and it was small enough, and we were small enough that it was a good size at the time, where we could skate around. And Dad was, you know, obviously older and more talented than we were. And so whenever Mitchell's my brother, whenever he got too far ahead, or you know, was starting to win, then Dad was on my team, and so he kept the games evenish. But Mitchell and I are both very competitive. So there weren't really any fights or anything that developed from hockey. There was only one. It was in high school. But that's a whole different story.
So going through middle school, was it, I just go to school so I can finish that and come and play hockey? Or what else did you have going on?
I liked school whenever I was, I still like school. I like to learn is really my thing. And school was always fairly easy for me. I don't mean to say that like braggadociously or anything, but like
on the podcast that say that, I'm like, okay, I feel like a lot of people had an easy time at school.
It's odd because I felt like whenever I was talking to my friends, they're like, oh man, I was up last night and I was studying for this test. And I was like, we have a test today. And then I'd do well on it. And I'm like, well,
I think that the thing that stands out for a lot of the people that said like some subjects were easy for me. And that was just because I enjoyed those subjects. So I was paying attention in class. I don't remember whenever studying at home other than I don't even remember what it's called. Spelling words?
Spelling. Oh, I hate spelling. I still can't spell.
Just like memorize it. But all like the other stuff that I did well in is because I enjoyed the stuff. And I know some of my friends were like, I don't really like this class. And then they had to study a lot for it.
Yeah. And I think that that's the thing that made school easy for me is that I find something interesting in almost everything, even things that like seem mundane, except spelling. Like obviously you can't get around, you can't get around memorizing spelling.
So where do you think that came from? Even finding something to enjoy in the mundane? Was that something your parents taught you, or is that just something you picked up?
I think it's just something that I picked up because my dad's horrible student. My brother's a horrible student. They have a really hard time finding something that's interesting. I think my mom is better at finding something that's interesting. But even then, like, she finds some of the stuff that I do is just like, why are you interested in doing that? Yeah. Like, because I don't know. It's interesting. It's weird.
So that's who you are. That's fantastic. When you're going through at a young age playing hockey in St. Louis, is there a program that says, hey, we need to get you on the travel leagues at this point. We need you here. We need you there. Oh, here comes my dog. Hello.
There wasn't anything that said that. So I transitioned from roller hockey, which was very like just kind of pickup league. It was very like whatever the equivalent of Little League is in hockey. I don't know what they call that even anymore.
Yeah.
House league. But whenever I transitioned into ice hockey, we were going to do that. And then there was a opening, or they had a shortage of kids on the travel teams. And so I ended up on a lower level one of those. And then we actually played one of the higher level team, like the highest level team, that was still in our organization. And they were like, oh God, this kid belongs here. And so I didn't actually get to play that league until the next year. But
so what age is it that you start doing the travel league at?
What age would that be? Like eight?
So what kind of skills do you have that shows that you need to be playing at that higher level?
At that point, it was more like at 8 years old, it's just skating ability. Like you see somebody and they're kind of like, I don't know how to describe it, walking on the ice. Or kind of like,
like their ankles are going to give out at any moment.
Right. Well, I mean, there is a term in hockey. It's called benders, and that's whenever your ankle, like, it's supposed to be like this,
why
and
does
it's
kind of like every time.
So part of that is ankle stability and strength in the ankle. But if you don't do that quite yet, if you're in rental skates, you are fighting an uphill battle because the boot on that is so bad. I went on a cruise and I couldn't bring my skates on the cruise, obviously, and so I was in rental skates and I could barely stand on the ice. Like I've been skating for 23 years at the time and could still barely stand up in those things. So like it's not all on you if you can't stand in rental skates.
I feel like I'm a decent athlete, but as soon as I put skates on, well, not looking good.
I was going to say, I thought you were the best athlete on TikTok.
I'm trying. So as a rundown for that, I have 130 events on a spreadsheet. And I feel like that first we have to define athlete. So it's speed, agility, strength, and athleticism. So like that's in the definition. Didn't think you were allowed to do that.
I was going to say that's hard, but okay.
Every definition I look up has that in there. So I look at a power lifter. All right, they're going to destroy me on any of the strength numbers, but I feel like if we get into any sport or maybe sprinting or the mile or a 5K, whatever it is, I feel like I'll be able to dominate them pretty good on that end. And then if you go and look at a college or a pro athlete, say we got like tennis or basketball, I feel like maybe I can take them in soccer, table tennis. Unless you played professionally, I'm probably going to beat you. I had a coach. I played in a couple tournaments, did terribly, but those guys have been playing.
That's still better than I could do
for more than 6 months.
Yeah.
if we look at pickleball and you haven't played that, definitely going to beat you there because I played high level tennis. So. First off, I got to figure out what the definition is. Hopefully, I'll get enough people to figure that out with me. But I think it's an interesting idea because athleticism for football is a lot different than for soccer or track or all those different things. So that's my idea on that part.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to like athleticism as a whole is really hard to define because basically what you were saying is, you know, whenever you have one, if you're defining it by one category, then like everybody in soccer is probably going to destroy me, like in soccer. But can they play tennis? Can they play baseball? Like, I feel like that, how well does it transfer to other sports is what defines you as an athlete, because everybody can get good at doing something like over and over. Not that I'm saying that that's not impressive, because there's soccer players out there that will be able to do something that I'll never be able to. And that's incredible. But can you do the other things?
Because you got like Tom Brady, greatest athlete of all time. Well, I'd like to say he's the greatest.
He's
quarterback at of all time. Like, I'll give him that distinction.
The reason he's not like, if I remember right, his sprint times for the, what is it, the 40 that they, he's awful. He's absolutely awful. The thing is, the thing that he does better than absolutely everybody else is he thinks the game so well. And that's what makes him the best at position.
And I think that is also part of athleticism, because that is part of the tests for the combine. Like, there's obviously they show you the broad jump and all those types of things, but there's a lot of other mental tests that you have to go through too. And if you're just a straight goon and don't understand the sport, you're going to have a hard time with it.
Right. Exactly. And there's, I mean, even hockey used to be one of those kind of sports where you have just somebody who's going to go beat the shit out of somebody, and they don't even have that anymore. Even your goons have got to be able to play the game.
No, my uncle has written a couple hockey books. They're Canadian, so whenever we would go up there, like, they talk hockey, and I'd be like, nope, I don't get it. Like, you've taught me what icing is multiple times. I think I'm getting it. But
my uncle still calls it frosting. Learning. Like, the difference between icing and frosting.
So back to, oh no, best athlete on TikTok, ice skates. So we're moving up in the ranks. You move up to the high level travel team. Was that a rude awakening? Yeah. You're like, hey, this is where I belong.
No, that was definitely where I belonged. There was still another like level above that. So there's AA. So there's like AA, and then downwards is A1, A2, B1, B2. And then as you go up, there was AAA was above me. And I never, AAA was, especially here, there's not any other AAA teams. So you're looking at traveling to Chicago and Colorado and all that. Like, they're all over. And that was too much money, too much time to invest into it. And I was, I mean, I'm still not a big guy, but I was, less than 100 pounds going into high school, and maybe 5'2".
Just getting it.
Yeah. So, so I knew that I wasn't like, it would have been really hard for me to make it in hockey. But so we never did like that. But I played in the AA level, and then stayed basically with that all through until high school. And in high school, I played, they came up with an in-between league called, maybe it was before that, but there was an in-between league called Central States, which was a conglomerate of teams that were basically in that same place where they were not quite, they were way better than AA, but not AAA. And that was teams from like Wisconsin, Chicago, Indiana, that area. And so we traveled around there and played there, and there were some a lot of those teams went and like won nationals. The team that I played against won nationals, so, and we put them to a like decent game.
At the stature we're at, not expecting to go to the league, the NHL, how was it where you could just like enjoy playing? Was it more enjoyable than some of the guys that were like, oh man, I got to keep moving up?
The thing was that I still had aspirations of playing in the NHL. I didn't know how realistic they were. I knew that I was going to have to take a different route there. But whenever I was in high school, and my coach told me that if I had been 6'2", 180, and I was not, then I would have been playing in the OHL, if you know it. And that's really high level really high level hockey. And I was like, well, that's kind of disappointing. Thanks, and also cool that you think I'm that good, but also that makes zero difference because I can't do that. Yeah. Like I can't grow 4 inches and put on 50 pounds. It's just like,
what's the shortest guy in the NHL?
Currently, I don't know. Marty St. Louis was definitely the guy that I remember being like short and was my inspiration. Mm-hmm. I'm going to look him up really quick and see how tall he was. Because I want to say he's like, there he is, 5'8", and he was 180. Dude's legs were like tree trunks. I mean, like, huge. But he was quick and agile and knew where everybody was on the ice. Because if you don't, you're going to get your head taken off at that small.
And that's the 0.01% of people at that height that have played.
Right. So it was unlikely for me to go. I wanted to play in some of the other leagues. Like, I mean, the AHL would be super cool, but I was more like my way in was going to be going out to like Sweden.
So,
and playing in a European league.
We're in high school. What does a day look like as far as just like regular day for you?
Oh, gosh. Depending on when.
Well, it's the busiest season.
There was... Okay. So, in my sophomore year, I was playing on the youth hockey team, which is the more competitive league. And then, so in St. Louis, the high schools are not super competitive. We're like in Minnesota and those kind of places. High school is actually like where you want to be to play. But so I was playing in the Central States League. I was playing on the JV and the varsity team.
That seems tiring.
So, yeah. So I had practice at least once a day, if not twice. And there were times that we drove from like from school to practice and then to another practice and then would go home. So, and then every weekend was full because I was out. I was with one of the teams. And then we had games on like Tuesday nights for the high schools because all the kids that were really good were playing on other teams. And so they were gone for the weekend. So we put the games on weekdays. So yeah, that was how my standard day looked that year was wake up at 6 a.m, get showered, get ready to go to school, sit in school for 8 hours and then go to 2 practices or 1 practice and then possibly a game
at this point,
not as much as I should have been most likely. I tried to eat, but I was not a big eater. My family kind of joked that I ate for necessity rather than enjoyment. Like I'd eat food, but it wasn't, and it's not that I had an unhealthy relationship with food by any means. It was just, I was never that hungry or I was always doing something else. And so I'd forget to eat or I was, you know, I didn't want to eat before practice or a game and then feel bad for while I was playing. So I should have eaten more. I don't really think that would have changed how much I weighed or anything at the moment. I tried really hard. There was my coach told me to keep a food log. And at the time I was eating really cruddy. I was having like Pop Tarts and peanut butter and jelly every day and fruit snacks and, you know, 7 Snickers. And so instead of lying to him about what I was eating, but I didn't want to tell him what I was eating. So I was like, I'm going to have to change this. Like, this is bad.
how many calories do you think you're eating in a day?
At that time, not as much as I should have. Probably 25, 3,000, maybe 35 on a really really tiring day.
I have a buddy that's similar build, and maybe 150 soaking wet. And he was a soccer player, and his wife, she now has her master's in dietetics. And in college, she's like, "You're always eating all this food. You never gain weight. Let me see how many calories I can get you." She got him up to around 10,000 calories a day, and he's still just sitting at 155. She's like, what is going on here? And like slowly it like would go up sometimes. And then like he was just like tired of eating, then right back down.
Yep. Yeah, I had. So I went. that's my favorite story to tell about juniors. So after I played in high school, I played juniors, junior hockey, which is like, it's an in-between league from high school to college. High school or hockey has a really weird, I don't know, system in that way, that you don't go from high school to college. You go through this intermediate of juniors. So a lot of hockey players are like 24 whenever they graduate, 25 whenever they graduate college.
Is that just because they want to get like see if you can get into like the pros, or like what's the point of juniors?
That's basically it. Yeah, it's another like in Canada, those leagues are insanely good, and like they'll draft straight out of juniors. And so those people don't even like go to college as far as I know. Like maybe some of them do. I'm not going to speak on all of them, but you know, you could just go directly from the OHL to the NHL. And I think that it's a really like semi-pro league where the only thing that you really have to worry about is playing hockey. And it's a really cool, it's an amazing environment. Like some of the best memories I've ever had. But why that became a thing instead of like just going from high school to college, I can't speak on that, to be honest. But after my first season of juniors, I went and I tried out for a different team, and they were doing an interview with me, and they said, you know, what did you learn? Like what made you better over the last year playing juniors? And I said, you know, like at first the game speed was a little bit different than what I was used to. People are a lot bigger. And so it was a bit different trying to get used to. I was playing against, you know, 18-year-olds who, you know, the strength level, you know, in high school varies so much. You got high school players or high school football players who are benching like 225, and I was benching like 115 at the time, maybe, you know. But then, you know, some of the older players in the league are 21, and those people are
just
like
full
men.
Testosterone.
So
massive beards, muscles. Yeah. They got it.
Yeah. And I sat there and I couldn't, like, at the time I have peach fuzz and I'm playing against somebody with a full beard. And I was like, good Lord. But anyway, so I got through and they said, what did you learn? And I said, well, you know, there's the game speed's different. Playing against people who are bigger is really, you know, more difficult. But I think the biggest thing was that I got bigger over the course of last season, and I was maybe a buck 45 at the time, and they were like, you got bigger? I was like, oh. yeah I did. I started out at like 135. Maybe at the end of that I was like 155. And then end of my second season I capped out at like 170, and that I was
Is that muscle, or are we just?
Wow. It was muscle. So they did. Skin calipers to test body fat. And at the beginning of the season, I was 155 at 6% body fat, and at the end of December, I was 170 at 8%.
That's phenomenal.
It was insane, and that was I was working out. I had two workouts a day. And practice. And then that was the time that I was eating. I would come wake up in the morning, have a protein shake with my breakfast, come home after my morning workout and have a protein shake with my lunch, have a protein shake for a snack, and then eat, and then go back out again. That was something. I don't really want to eat that much again.
So was that something that their sports trainer was telling you to do? Like, how did you learn to do that?
One of my coaches, actually the coach that asked me for the nutrition log, told me that I should be consuming a gram of protein per pound of body weight every day. And I was like, okay, I think I can do that. And then I was like trying to figure out how much that actually was. It's a lot. It's so much. And I wasn't really prepared for that much, to be honest. But so that was just kind of my thing, and I didn't have any nutritional direction really. I knew in general that, like, you know, having having a bunch of Snickers and Nutty Bars and ice cream is not the best way to put on the good kind of weight. And so I tried to eat more like meals instead of snacks, but still eat more. And then they told me to eat that if you eat faster, then you don't realize that you're full as quickly. And so you can eat more things and get more calories in. And I was like, okay, I'll do it.
Like I could just clip that last like 2 minutes. And if most athletes just followed that, they'd be in a much, much better position. With that added weight, did you feel like you got a bunch stronger? Like how did it improve your game?
Oh yeah, I was, I could muscle people off the puck more often than not at that point. There's a couple of clips that I have of somebody coming at me and I'll put them down, which is really the most satisfying feeling ever. Like going and hitting somebody whenever they have the puck is like cool. But whenever they think that they're going to lay you out and you just reverse them.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I was playing rugby and I was like, I think the best term they gave me at that point, this was before I started strength training or anything like that. It was like a fat skinny. So it was like a wild card. You don't really know what's going to happen. And some guy, like, I didn't know what I was doing, but like he just came in a bad tackle. And I stayed up and like passed the ball. And it kind of looked like I shoved this guy off, but man, he took the wind out. Like afterwards, they're like, woo. I'm like, just like, oh my God, what just happened? I was like, okay, was that worth it? So with all that strength and speed and stuff like that, what type of workouts were you doing for those two-a-days?
So the first one was almost always just straight like weights. If you think bench, squat, some deadlift, I didn't do nearly enough deadlift at the time. But it was very, very standard. Like if you just think about a workout program that's, you know, with barbells and stuff, like that was what I was doing. The second workout was generally more plyometric and body weight stuff. So quick feet. Type things where you're doing ladder drills and stuff like that. We did 5 minute planks, not like just straight, but like trying to alter the position at least a little bit. So you'd go from like front to side and stuff like that, but still like trying to plank for 5 minutes. That was absolutely awful. But a lot more body weight stuff because then we practiced right after that. So we didn't want to be completely burnt out by the time we got to practice, but still like, so a lot of the, looking back on it, it's a lot of power, power and quickness type stuff, trying to activate like fast twitch muscle fibers. And then, whenever we got out on the ice, then it was more that like medium range, cause there's definitely like sprinting and stuff in hockey but it's a lot more sustained. And so it's like that 45 second, energy system. It's not exactly cardio. It's not exactly sprint.
It's not casual.
Somewhere in the middle.
Not casual. seconds. So with the rotations or line changes, what's the average time that you're on the ice?
30 to 45
and
seconds.
You're just going.
Yeah. Yeah. It's if you go up and down the ice once and you're going like you're gassed. One of my favorite things, like it doesn't look like a whole lot, but one of my favorite things to do was on the penalty kill. So we've got one less guy on the ice after you take a penalty. The idea there is to waste as much time as you possibly can. So I was fast. One of my biggest things was I was fast. So we'd ice the puck, get it all the way down the ice. And I'd try to beat their guy to the puck and then pin it against the boards and just keep it there as long as I could.
Pass it or whatever. So you'd send it down there and then you would get there before him? Like, how often does this happen?
I was fast. it was roughly like, so it's normally the penalty kill, right? The guy that I did that was my partner for that, me and him got so good at reading off of each other and how much pressure that we applied. They called it the power kill.
Perfect.
But there were times that I'd beat them down the ice and I'd hold it in the corner for a good 30, 40 seconds and waste that much time on the clock. It's a long time. And basically just battling somebody on the wall, I almost want to call it like an isometric hold for 45 seconds with somebody pushing on you.
I played floor hockey like with a bigger person, and when they got their stick there, I'm just, it's not happening.
Yeah. Right. So that was, but doing that, I'd need, it's crazy to think that I went back out there again in like a minute and a half, two and a half minutes, something like
when
that. Like
you beat them down there, is it by like a length? Is it by a couple of meters? And if it's by a decent amount, aren't they just going to come and ram you?
Yes.
Like, oh no.
I was so being the middle child and having an older brother, like I felt like I was more willing to put myself in those dangerous situations because I was used to getting beat up. Not that my brother was an asshole by any means.
That like, one fight, but how'd that happen?
Oh, so my brother was skating up the ice. Do you understand offsides?
Like you're on the outside of the ice.
Oh, offsides. No, offsides, like the blue lines.
Offsides, yeah. You can't be past the blue line at a certain time. Gotcha.
Right. So to try and stay, to try to keep from going offsides, I cut across the blue line. And my brother was coming up, so I cut this way. My brother was coming up like this.
Yeah.
You can see where that went. I ran into him. We still argue to this day about whose fault
that
was.
Were you on the same team? Oh, no.
Yes. Yeah, and he was so mad. Like, so I hit him hard enough and was like trying to dodge and all that kind of stuff. I lost my stick, and he took my stick and like javelined it down the ice back to our end, and I was so mad. I was fuming because I he should have just passed me the puck. But so I'm fuming, go over, pick up my stick, and as soon as I pick it up, I get a pass from the defenseman, and he's streaking across the middle of the ice, and I throw a tape-to-tape pass, send him in on a breakaway, and go sat down on the ice, or sat down on the bench, and just yelling at him the entire time.
So, you didn't, like, just start fighting me in the middle of the game? Oh, man, that would be great. The other team wouldn't have known what to do. It's like, there's a fight. Wait, it's the teammates.
We did have a fight that happened like that. It was between another set of brothers, and it was in warm-ups. It was in warm-ups.
That's fantastic. Really psyched the team out. Like they're not afraid to fight each other. Like this is not.
Yeah.
So, did you ever get into fights when you were younger in the games, or what was your kind of move?
Not generally. Almost always I was level-headed. I mean, I knew one of the things that my dad always used to preach to us was if you're going to the front of that, expect to get hit and have a plan for like when that happens. Have you ever been driving a car and had your tire go out? Do you know what the correct reaction is to having your tire go out?
You're supposed to turn into it.
Yeah, you turn into the skid. If your tire goes out, though, like if it just blows, you're not supposed to hit the brakes. Because that tire doesn't have any grip. Like, all you're going to do is send yourself in a spin. But if you haven't thought about that beforehand, that's 100% your reaction is to slam on the brakes. So that was his analogy to us was, if you're going to the front of the net and you get hit, if you haven't thought about it, you're going to come up swinging. But if you know that that's going to happen, you've got a plan, and like not necessarily turn into the skid or anything, but just like take it on the chin, smile at him, tell him thank you, you know, then you're not going to swing back.
That's great. I like that.
So that was how I approached a lot of stuff. And I wasn't big enough to try and start anything either. So
for sure. So when we're in juniors, and what else are we doing in the day other than two practices or two times at the gym and then a regular practice? Like, are we living in a dorm? How does that work?
Oh, so I moved to Peoria and lived with a family there. Like, they hosted us. So I moved in with a family that I didn't know for 8 months, and, you know, it just became part of the family.
Big hockey fans, or Why do people do that?
Some of them are. I don't know. The family that I ended up with was not huge into hockey at the time. It was interesting. I'm still friends with them. Like, I still talk That's to awesome. Them to this day. But I couldn't tell you why they do it. It's cool to kind of give back because they definitely don't make any money off of it. You pay for housing, but it's not nearly enough to cover whatever it is that I did while I was there. It may have paid for groceries, but I ate a lot. So
had to bulk up.
Yeah. But it was really interesting moving in with a new family and basically just trying to figure out how to be part of that. And some houses had more than one kid there. So there was like the house down the street had three boys that were staying there, and they also had two sons.
That was rowdy.
So it was a full house. Yeah. That also became like the hangout house. So it was always people there.
That's very so how do these people even get approached? Do they put their name on a list? Like
as far as I know, they have to have some place for the guys to stay, and instead of buying a house like for people to stay in, they just do it that way.
There you go. So,
and I think that there was a little bit of, I don't know if there was an interview process, but I know that not everybody gets to do it.
Probably a good move.
Yeah.
So you said you had some of your best memories there. Was it while traveling? Was it while playing the games? Just meeting the guys?
Mostly the guys. I mean, some of the locker room and everything, like it was, I got closer with those guys, especially since we spent so much time together off the ice. But I got closer with those guys in the 8 months that I had there than I had with some of the guys that I'd been playing youth hockey with for, you know, really? 5-6 years. Yeah. Cause I mean, we were literally together for, probably at least 4 hours every day.
That's a decent amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't give away too many secrets. But there's a lot of bonding, a lot of bonding that goes on.
No more needs to be said. So we go through our first year. We're in our second interview for the next team. What happens after that?
I ended up going back to the same team, which was a little frustrating because I played tier three juniors, and I wanted to move up to tier two. And so I went to a couple places, and I had made it. So I had tried out for a tier two team my first year and didn't quite make it. Like I was right on the edge, I felt like. And then went my second year and I was like, well, I'm just going to kill this. Right. That was the moment that I realized that it was all politics. Okay. Like even at that point, it was just politics. In tryouts, whenever they have a penalty, what they do is line everybody up on the blue line and have the guy who was fouled be at center ice. You send him in on a breakaway and just play starts as soon as he touches the puck. Yeah. Seems fair. Sure. My goal, like as soon as I saw that guy, I was a fast guy. I was going to make sure he didn't get a shot off.
That's aggressive.
That was my job. Yeah. I caught the guy, lifted his stick before he got to the top of the circles, took the puck away from him. I've never seen anybody else do that. So that's in high school or in college, we did a fastest skater competition with stopwatches. We didn't have the lasers and everything, but this year for the all or for the skills competition, the fastest skater competition, I think it was Kairu, which is a blues player, won the fastest skater competition at what is it like 13.5 seconds for a lap around
Seems
the
quick.
Rink. Very quick. Now they get a running start at it too. So they start at the blue line and then the red line is where they start the timer, but it's also with lasers. Now we were doing stopwatches and we were starting at a dead stop at the red line. So there's multiple, you know, different variables there. But I was under 14 seconds. So starting from a stop and the amount of error that you have with a stopwatch, I'm less than 0.5 seconds slower.
Seems pretty good.
Than what the fastest guy in the NHL is. So all that to say, I am pretty fast. I got a call for my exit interview from that team. And they told me that I wasn't skilled enough to be a first or second line guy, and I wasn't gritty and big enough to be a third or fourth line guy. And I was like, okay, I guess I can see that. And I was just like, okay, so what could I do like throughout the season to acquire that, you know, whatever it is that you're looking for, what can I do to get there? And they told me, you know, just work on like your basics, your stick handling. And I was just like, okay, yeah, I get that. Your shot. Yeah. I don't think I've got the best shot, and your skating. And I was like, my skating? Did you see me? And at that point, it was at that point that I was just like, they don't even know who I am. Like, even after I just had like one of the best tryouts of my life, and you still have no idea who I am. You didn't watch. Like,
so how does that work? Like, there's just a couple of scouts there. There's just a couple of people there.
So, for juniors, it was, you go to like their rink, and there was probably, eight of their staff that were there watching the whole tryout. And then you could go to as many tryouts as you wanted to, honestly. I only went to like 4 or 3, something like that.
I feel like fastest guy should get some notoriety.
I felt that way too. And then he told me to work on my skating, and I was like, okay.
Did you say anything to him about that? No.
No. I didn't figure there was any point. I could yell at him. But
maybe some other guy got to the league via your skating ability. And it was all just a big miss up.
I guess.
So, on that end, is there any, because there's a baseball player that he went and like pitched like a 90 something in like sandals. Is there any opportunities for you to like do like a skating thing at like an NHL game? And they're like, what?
No, not really. Not that I know of anyway. I did play against, so in Peoria, there was a semi-professional team that was there, and some of their guys would come out and skate with us on occasion. And I went around one of their defensemen, and I remember him, like, as I was going past him, he was like, oh, fuck, he's fast, and turns around and tries to catch me. I was like,
yep. So is there something that you're wanting? Well, we'll wait for that question later. Where do we move after that?
So during my second year, I got approached by Missouri State, and they wanted me to play for them. There was a couple other D3 NCAA D3 schools that I was looking at, and Missouri State was. Technically, they were trying to give me a academic scholarship, but like they were making not unless you're like NCAA D1. But they were giving me like making exceptions and stuff like that, and really pushed through. That's a whole thing. But I ended up with the scholarship that I deserve the scholarship based on my academics, but like based on policy, they had to alter it for me. But so I played at Missouri State for 2.5 years, and then I got into a car accident that ended my career.
So before the car accident, how were those 2 years?
They were okay. It was a little frustrating. The coach didn't. A lot of coaches have a hard time appreciating what I bring to the table, because what I am is very smart on the ice, and the two things that I am is smart and fast. But I'm not super flashy. Like, there are a lot of guys that will take the puck through four guys and put it top shelf. And I'm like, yeah, I can't do that. It's not that I can't do that, but I don't. I mean, if I try to, then I can sometimes, but you know, so it takes a lot of people a long time to figure out where my value is. And so even with the numbers that I was putting up, I ended up getting rookie of the year my freshman year, and I still didn't see any power play time. Like, I didn't understand that. And then I figured, you know, maybe whenever these people leave, then I'll have more opportunity. And that didn't happen either. It was still a lot of fun. Like, I loved playing at that high level of competition. And I ended up seeing a lot of people from juniors, actually. Like, I played against other people from back then. And it was a ton of fun to do that. But at the time, it kind of, I was thinking about quitting anyway, because I wasn't having fun. Which really was awful because I love the game, and it ended up just bad. And then the decision got made for me. So.
Was there anybody that you were playing with in juniors or like that you were meeting in college that were like, hey, yep, this guy is going pro or is about to go pro, or did you see any of that around you?
I played not, I don't think I saw anybody at that level whenever I was playing that high, as in high school or college. I played with a guy in actually I did play with a guy in high school. I don't know how far he made it. I'd have to look him up again. But as soon as I was on his line, he was like 2 years younger than I was, playing up a division, and absolutely insane. He hit his growth spurt early, so he was like 6'1" and 170 whenever he was 16.
That's,
and
I'm nice. Like,
damn, wish I had that. But he played very high level juniors. I'm pretty sure he got immediately taken into tier one, and then committed to an NCAA school in Minnesota, which I can't remember which one. He was insane. And oh, this is kind of cool. I played against Mario Lemieux's son.
That's cool. I even know that name.
He was on the bench too, but it was really funny because I was trying to figure out like which one Lemieux's kid is. He's got to be the one that's insane, right? And I got to the end of the game and I was like, yeah, he really didn't impress me that much. And I was 18 at the time, senior in high school, and they said, yeah, he's 14. And I was like, oh, that makes sense now.
That's fantastic. So yeah, let's break down that car accident, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So I got hit from behind about 2 weeks before that car accident in a game, and had a concussion from that. Got in the car. We were going back after Thanksgiving break. Traffic in front of us stopped. We got stopped. The person behind us didn't see traffic stop at all. So they rear-ended us going about 70, and we were stopped.
That's fast.
Yeah. They at least like kind of, they turned and clipped the side of us, but it was still going fast enough that it was, I hit my head on, I think it probably was the side window. And I don't remember a whole lot after that.
Do you know if they were on their phone or something?
I don't know. It was also like over a hill and the sun was in an awful spot, but I have no idea.
So are we waking up in the hospital or like what's...
I had, so this is the second like really bad concussion that I'd had. So I ended up taking a ton of concussion courses and stuff, but, getting a concussion on top of a concussion like that is like the mortality rate is like 25%, like just straight dead.
So the
because
second
of that.
Concussion could have been lights out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's the second time that that's happened to me in my life.
Damn.
Yeah. So there's a period of time that I just have no idea. Like, I have very, very few memories. So the next like solid memory that I have after that is, gosh, I was giving a presentation in my psych class and I couldn't stand up because I was dizzy. Like, that's the next solid memory that I have after getting hit. I know that I was in the hospital and I can tell you some of the things that happened at the hospital, but I don't actually remember them. It's more from what people have told me.
Is it similar to being drunk? Because I hear when you're drunk that it just doesn't record. Like, you're there, things are happening, you process, but you just, the record button's not on. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly how it is. The first time that this happened to me, I was in like middle school, and much shorter story. I got hit, hit from behind, and then I got hit in the face with a basketball on the playground.
What, knocked me out cold. Kickball with it? How'd it hit you so hard?
I don't actually know, because thinking about where I was on the basketball court, it doesn't really make sense how I got hit that hard. But
just some random teacher you see running away on the accident, they chucked it.
Right. But at that time, I remember this one. I remember as I came downstairs in the morning and there was a plate of brownies that was sitting there. And I asked my mom, who made these brownies? And she was like, you did. And I was like, oh,
not a good look.
Yeah. They told me that I remember opening my present at Christmas, and they told me that I bought it, but I don't remember that either.
Did you wrap it for yourself?
No, I didn't wrap it.
You know, Santa gave me this? Oh, this is fantastic. How did
That's exactly.
You know? Parents over there are like, what?
Yeah. But yeah, I basically didn't have a record button on my memory for probably a good 6 months. I think the next thing that I remember after that was, it had to be mid-February, maybe later than that, March.
So it,
I definitely don't remember my birthday that year.
So is it like a total reset? Like, where does your path go at that? Like, where are you wanting your path to go at that point?
I had no idea anymore because, well, I mean, I had already kind of made the decision to go into chiropractic, but I wanted to go try my hand at hockey as long as I could. And it had been a part of who I was for, you know, 20 years at the time. And I never really, I mean, not until much later in my life that I didn't process that like loss of my identity. So I knew that at that point I was going, like, I had to put all my eggs in the educational basket instead of the athletics basket, which, you know, it was something that I was going to have to do anyway, which is fine. Yeah. But I just wasn't ready for it at the time.
So what does the educational basket look like at that point? What are we getting into?
So after a different car accident, my sister and one of my best friends,
we're going to get you
don't
Uber
let women drive.
And that's just going to take Ubers or maybe the train. Maybe you just take the train.
Maybe the train is the way to go. No, I make jokes that, you know, don't let women drive because that was both drivers of but it wasn't their fault. Like, it's just a joke.
You won't get canceled on this podcast. I'll allow it. It's a good joke.
But after my first car accident, I ended up with a torn labrum in my shoulder. And my mom was going to see this chiropractor at the time who had a, quote, different view on what chiropractic was. And I was like, I don't know what that means. And I went and talked to him for a little while, and it was different. It was more like rehab focused. It was, you know, I felt like a lot of chiropractors at the time have the idea of like, oh, you're out of alignment. We just need to put that back in and then you'll be better. And his thing was, even if that was the case, even if bones were like moving that much and your alignment was off, then to keep you in good alignment, we need to work on the muscles that are attached to the bones as well as, you know, just moving them, which isn't accurate. Like, bones don't move like that, but that's a whole different story.
I've had a couple chiropractors on here, and I go see a chiropractor as well, and a lot of them have since moved away from the your ribs out,
bone out of place,
your this mm-hmm. and that, and a lot of them now have PTs, and they're like, yeah. Hey, I'm gonna adjust you, but this is what caused the issue. We're gonna keep your spine there so that you can do things, but also let's work on this stuff.
Yeah. So he was the first one that I'd ever seen do something like that. And it made a big enough impact on me. I worked out with him before I went to juniors, actually. But got into the car accident, had that shoulder problem, got surgery on it, and had him do my rehab. And then at that point, I was probably there to 2 or 3 days a week for my shoulder because I wanted to be ready for whenever my college season started up. He took my rehab that was supposed to take, it was 6 to 8 months for labral repair, and he got it done in 4. And so I was back playing again for game one. Yeah. So at that point,
purely through just like range of motion stuff, strength stuff, how did he improve that so quickly?
That's a rabbit hole if you want to go down it.
I mean, I got time if you got time.
Yeah, I got time. So that kind of gets into like how I practice and what impact he had on me. So we started out from positions that look really odd. It's so the system that he utilizes, which I utilize now, is called DNS, which is dynamic neuromuscular stabilization. It's based in developmental kinesiology. Okay. So it's looking at how babies develop and what muscles they activate first and positions that they're in to get coordination of their joints. Doing that helped to activate the muscles that don't normally get mm-hmm. activated. And that provided the stabilization for my shoulder that was necessary and that a lot of people don't. It was also in a more functional way than most other PTs that I've seen or that I had seen.
A lot of machines? Are you crawling around the ground? What's going on?
That's how I got into the crawling. I mean, that was stage one crawling. yeah, a lot of the positions are actually isometric to start with, but it ends up very. It's more stable than or more functional than so one of the things that you'll see a lot on like rotator cuff exercises is let's get up here a little bit more so you can see my arm. They'll have that band you're doing like this. Yeah. And it's just how often in life do you
whenever
do that?
You're opening the doors.
Right.
You're looking for snacks, you're opening the window or the door because it's you got to get some fresh air in all the time.
Exactly. So the analogy that I give to everybody is, are you left-handed or right-handed?
My fine motor skills are left hand, my gross motor skills are right hand. Terrible at writing with both of them, so.
Okay, so which hand do you throw a ball with? Okay. Can you throw a ball left-handed?
I can. Sometimes it's a better spiral, but it does not look pretty. It's if I can, that's a really nice motion right there. That it looks like it could be. It's not.
Right. So do you think the reason that you can't throw as well left-handed is because you're lacking strength in your left arm?
I think it's just lack of repetition.
So it's more of a brain muscle connection than it is strength. Okay. So this motion right here, all you're doing is strength. So if you wanted to get better at throwing a ball or if you wanted to get better at whatever, you have to do those motions. So doing something that you're doing every day all the time, that's how you rehab something. That was the big thing that he put on me and that why these positions were more, or this style of rehab was more advantageous. And so doing that made it, instead of like trying to incorporate strength and then like just going straight into like trying to throw, and you just, well, just keep throwing until it looks good. It was, you know, progressions through different functional steps. And that was why you used the developmental kinesiology model, which is the babies. Going through those steps, you basically reform your shoulder from how you did whenever you were a baby.
I like that a lot. Also, the exercises that the PT gives you or the chiropractor or whoever gives you, I would love to see a study done on the percentage of people that do those when they get home. I want to say it's less than 1%.
It's disgustingly low. I don't know if it's 1%, but I've been treating people. I'm currently a student, but I get to treat people in clinic. Under the supervision of a real doctor currently. Soon that'll, in December I graduate and I can say that I'm a real doctor, but thank you. But you can totally tell when people have done their exercises and when they haven't. Like,
I don't see a life where someone's like, yeah, I got 10 minutes instead of watching Netflix or coming home from the job that I hate or whatever it is. Well, like, the habit's not there. It's just, it's not going to happen.
No. Right. And that's, a lot of people will say, I just don't have the time. And I'm like, that's bullshit. Like, you just really don't have the motivation, which is fine, but just own that, you know? Whenever I think I said it on one of my videos was, the guy that I was seeing, in clinic wanted me to do some of those kind of exercises. That are more like strength based than function based. And I was like, yeah, I just don't have time for that. And now I crawl for 30 minutes every day. Like, no, it's 100%. I had the time. It was going to take me 2 minutes to do those exercises. And instead I decided to crawl for 30. Yeah. Totally didn't have the time.
And like, I follow a lot of the BJ Fogg method on where based off the skill and level of motivation, like if it's a high motivation that you need, like, then you really got to be pumped up to do it. If it's real high skill, you're going to need a lot of motivation because it's going to be hard to do. So something that's not enjoyable to do, just sit there and do those stretches for maybe like 10 or 15 minutes, like, you're going to need a decent amount of motivation, even though the skill's not that high. And it's just, it's not going to happen for most people.
Right. There's a, is that, does he talk about flow? Is that the same guy?
I think
guy?
He does, but it's more of like a habits. He does some tiny habits things, but I think he does talk about flow as well.
I can't remember who it was, but it was the scale that was difficulty on one end and how skilled you are on the other. Yeah. And right in the middle of that, whenever those things are relatively equal, you get really excited to do stuff. If you're, that's the thing that like I was struggling with. That is that it wasn't hard. It was just I'm way better than I felt like I was more skilled than that, and so I just didn't want to do it. Where, you know, that's why I started. One of the reasons that I started crawling, but you know, now I'm at a point where I'm doing stuff that's. It's challenging and it's fun, you know.
Well, and that leads to a possibility of excellence or expertise or improvement. Where this, what are we doing? What? Are
yeah,
we,
nobody.
Okay, we're getting these. We're getting them. What? Like that's not.
Nobody
not
says
show off your friends doing that. It's like
look, I was gonna say nobody brags about having the best wall angel in the world.
look at my traps. We're doing great. Even though I don't think those are supposed to be engaged, I'm supposed to be relaxed.
Which is hard to get people to do.
That's how it helped improve from post-surgery so quickly. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Easy. That was only like 10 minutes. Nailed it.
That leads into all of why I do what I do now.
Did he go to Palmer? Where did he go for chiropractic?
He went to Logan.
Where was that?
He went to Logan, which is in St. Louis, and that's where I'm going.
I think I have way too many chiropractor friends now. But I a couple of them I played against in rugby, and they went to Palmer. I was like, how are you all so big? What is going on here? You got great practice if you got get to work on the rugby players all the time.
Oh yeah.
So did you stay at what was the school again that you went to for 2 years?
Missouri State. Oh,
for
2 years. I stayed at Missouri State throughout the rest of my college career after the car accident.
So what do you graduate with there?
I graduated with a degree in exercise and movement science, just a bachelor's, which if you just stick with that, it's more like PT or physical trainer and stuff like that, strength and conditioning coaches, those types of things. But it could also get me, you know, into, I was hoping to get it into like the PT route or the chiropractor route. And because the guy that, inspired me to do this was a chiro, so that's where I went.
How good is the information that they're giving you through getting your bachelor's? Is it out of date by now? Like what type of stuff are you learning that's now either better or worse than when you were there?
I think that a lot of the information that I got then was very baseline. Like it felt like a lot of background. So we had, you know, normal anatomy and physiology classes. That doesn't change a ton. We had some exercise physiology classes. So you learn about like energy systems and how to put together a workout plan and stuff like that. Which that is a whole rat's nest in itself, because that's changed so much, and I don't know what's the right way to do it anymore. I'm not sure there is a right way.
Interesting thing about it is like you can go like every year or two it comes out where this is the best new way to do it, but there's just so few tests going on. Like it's really hard to throw a large test group together. It's really hard to do this.
It's extremely hard. And like I got, so at, my senior project was, I did a study that was comparing like standard 3 days a week, 3x10 type of exercise to what is it? 91 set of 90 seconds at 80% of your max.
You can go for 90 seconds?
Once a week.
So give me a workout, a 1 day workout.
So once a week, what they did was basically bench press, but it was all on machines. But so chest press, shoulder press, leg press, lat pull, and lat row.
And so that was it. You work up to 80% one rep?
No, it was at 80% of your max, holding tension for 90 seconds. Not isometrically, but like just a slow reps. You're going for like five-second cadence.
I'm benching
trying
right
to get
now.
Nine reps total.
Here at 80% for 90 seconds.
For 90 seconds.
What was the result?
The result was that it was the same as going 3 times a week at 3x10. The problems that I have with the study.
Come on. I was about to say we got to get the 3-phase workout guy in here. He's like,
I mean, it's basically it's the same kind of idea. I just saw one of his videos today actually, and I was like, I understand where you're coming from here. Because once you get to that, basically the idea behind it, I read a book on it, and it was like, whenever you get to that point of muscular failure, you have such a strong physiological adaptation response, because your body is like, holy shit, you almost died because you're at this level of fatigue. And that's what stimulates more muscle growth along with the micro tears and all that other stuff that you talk about with normal strength training. But getting a hormonal response along with that, a huge hormonal response.
So I think the last one, the new one that I heard that came out was the guys at the UFC, whatever it is, they're like 6 sets of 10, 2 minute rest, whatever it is that you can hit 10 reps with, like, that's what you got to be doing. Is that a similar response? Because, like, what he was saying is, yes, the 2 minutes is so, like, because it used to be, oh, you want a 3 to 4 minute rest so you can go back and push your maximal effort. But now what he's saying is we want to get more of a hormonal response of you're fighting for this thing. So is that kind of more of what they're saying on that end?
Okay. It's similar, yeah. I think that, so the thing is that muscles don't really know how much weight or anything like that. They just know if right. they're tired or not. So if you look at it like from an energy system thing, if you deplete all of the energy in the muscle, no matter how you do it, then that's what's going to be, what's going to give you the most hormone or the best hormonal mm-hmm. response. Depending on what, like, what you're specializing in, if you're trying to specialize in lifting the most amount of weight, then doing high rep or low reps at really high weight is going to be good, and then lots of rest in between to try and get the muscle to
gotcha.
Reset. But I'm convinced that you could make the same progress by doing extremely low weight, but doing like a lot of reps. It's just a lot easier to get the amount gotcha. Of fatigue that you have in a low amount of time with higher mm-hmm. higher weight.
So I got a bunch of questions. I think I'm going to stick with two though. So I'm trying to explain to my wife why. So as I said, we're soon to have a 5-month-old tomorrow. When she uh-huh. is rocking her and trying to put her to sleep and like bouncing around and stuff like that, and I'm letting her know that it's going to stay difficult because she's not getting the stimulus to get stronger and for it to get easier because her body is wrecked. I'm like, no, like we need to train, we need to lift, like to build you up. You're not getting the correct stimulus. How would you say that uh-huh. in your turn? Or like, is that correct on what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it is. My guess is that she's not doing that super often in terms of like multiple times a day, or the weight's not super high, you know, something like that.
Yeah, it's like,
right. Like it's just,
she's about 12 pounds right now.
She's holding the baby.
It's like 20 to 30 right. minutes of to put her down sometimes.
Okay. Yeah, I think that you're not getting, it's probably not getting the enough gotcha. Fatigue or enough load. Like, so if you were to do that same thing but hold like a 35 pound weight, then if you go back and do 12 pound baby, perfect. It's gonna be
I got
okay.
medicine balls in the garage. We got it. So have you looked into the art of cooling the body down as far as like in between workouts and stuff like that? What's
I think
your
that's
thoughts on that?
Fascinating.
Right now, I'm putting my hands and face in a cold tub in between sets.
That's the best okay. thing that I've heard. So it's not cold. Cold water correct. Isn't the way to do it. It's like
where it's,
okay.
Where it's
as long as you know that
your blood vessels to shut down.
Right. Which is it's an odd temperature that you're aiming for. Like I think that still needs to be explored more, or at least told to us, because all I've heard was cold, and I was like, okay, well, let's right. just get some cold.
Yeah,
so
it's like something. And, it's to where your body will still react and keep that blood flowing.
Right, right. And then hands and face, because the blood vessels in there are different yep. and do a better job of transmitting heat.
So. Like that apparently has been out, like when I go watch the YouTube video on it and stuff on that, and that's been out for years. How is that not bigger?
Mm-hmm. Because it's not easy to do, especially in like a gym setting. Like if you go to Planet Fitness, are you going to carry around a tub of water? Like that. So what do you yeah. do instead to get that level, or to get the cold to get you back in, to get your muscles to right. cool down again. And I don't know the answer to that. Like I'm out playing, whenever I go play hockey on Wednesday nights or whatever, then I'll take the snow off my skates and right. hold it in my hand, because my hands are warm enough that like it oh, yeah. steams away. And is that helping? I don't know.
Yeah.
But you know, I have ice everywhere to try and mm-hmm. make that work. In most gym settings, you don't have that, or you're doing it for time, or you're doing, you know, there's all these other factors that make you like not want to take time out of your workout right. to go do that, or the accessibility right. just isn't
there. There's a guy on Reddit that made a glove, and I think that it was like maybe 100 to like 150 like worth of stuff. It's like a rubber glove, so your hand's not like I've been I'm trying to find enough people to who are like, oh yeah, this is I actually for my birthday present, I had my wife's mom get me like cooling gloves from Amazon.
That's cool.
I'm
yeah.
trying something out other than just the tub, because I'm just like putting my hands in there and I'm trying to dry them off, and it's like, oh, do we put chalk on? Because then
right,
trying to figure that out. But
yeah,
why do you think that? No, I already asked that question. Like, where do you think that could be applied in like a program?
If you had, so okay, so for the program that I talked about earlier, for example, that's one set of whatever for 90 seconds, you need some amount of rest in between there. Putting your hands in cold water at that point, fantastic. A lot of people do supersets and things though with your yeah. standard workout, and there's not really a time for it unless you do it like after your circuit. So you do, you know, your set of squats, your set of hamstring curls and yeah. leg extensions, and then you go put your hands in there during your rest and then go back. Like it's hard to program yeah. in, I think, but I think that it has potential.
No, I'm trying to figure it out as any way to get back to peak physical condition faster than all these other guys before they can challenge me in person.
Right.
It's like, we gotta ramp this up. So as far as yeah. training goes, since you've seen a lot of different training modalities and ways to do it, if someone's mm-hmm. to run two or three a days, how do you determine if that's better? Because a lot of people can do one, but how do you get up to the 3 days that you were doing, or 4 days?
That's a good question, because I'm not sure that I know the answer to it, to be honest, how to get up there. I think that a lot of it has to do with programming in different muscle groups. Because if you're trying to do, you're not going to hit chest 3 times a day. Like that's just not a good idea. because at a certain, yeah, at a certain point you have to, you need yeah. the rest, you need the recovery time. That's the biggest thing that we were told, was, that as much as it is important to do your workout and everything, you've got to have that time to rest. If you're not putting the food and nutrients into your body that you need, and then getting adequate sleep, you're not going to see the gains that you want. And I was like, okay, so I guess I need to get better at sleeping. but you know, that's, so being able to do 2 a days or something like that is trying to work different muscle groups and working different energy systems. So if you're doing, you know, sprints on one thing, then you're not going to want to do sprints for the same muscle group or something that high intensity.
No, I think when I was growing up, I'm still growing up, in high school, this was in the summer, I would have cross country. So these are all just like camps that the school system or public, whatever, puts on. So I had cross country in the morning, I'd go to tennis, and then I'd have basketball, straight into soccer. And then like, I'd hang out with my friends. And then later that night, I might have like basketball, and I was just cruising, like felt phenomenal.
Yeah.
Also still a skinny fat kid at that point, 'cause my thyroid wasn't really working. So everyone's just looking at me like, what? How is this kid doing all this stuff? But why is it that kids can recover so much faster than we can in an older time?
The cell turnover rate a lot of times is much higher in kids than it is in adults. Like, what's kind of scary and sad, they were doing, I can't remember which study it was, but it was a study based that was on muscle mass and everything and how it degrades over time. And basically the peak muscle mass that you will ever have in your life is like at 25. And from that point on, it's downhill. Like, even if you were to do, yeah. And that, but that's not to say that you can't gain muscle. It's that, like, if you were...
That was my best chance.
That from that point...
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's the best point where you'll ever have that. And even if you were to work out, like, even if you were to work out the same or more that you did whenever you were 25, you'll never hit that same amount of muscle growth.
So we can still get the muscle mass, just a little bit harder work. Just throw on some cool gloves. Yeah. We can cool off a little
exactly.
bit. Percent of that 8. Perfect. We got that.
Yeah.
So I just need to get some younger cells in me. This is great. I hear there's a lot of rich people out trying these things.
There are ways to do that, though. I mean, not actually younger cells, but there is like the concept of like biological age versus what your actual age is. So if you look at your cells under a microscope and all that kind of stuff, and you look at DNA damage and if you know what telomeres are, they're like, then if you look at how much of that you have left, that determines basically longevity. So you can look at your cells, and if people who are doing workouts and stuff have longer telomeres and so therefore a lower biological age than what they actually are. So they look like they are 40 years old, but they have the body of a 30-year-old. Doing more workouts and stuff does help with that. Another thing that helps with that actually is fasting. Fasting is one of the best thing that the best way that I've heard it described is if your two options to perpetuate yourselves into the future are to divide or repair. If you have an energy surplus all the time, then you're always going to be making new cells because why wouldn't you? But if you're in an energy deficit, then the priority switches from creating new copies, because that takes a lot, to repairing what you have.
So are we looking at what type of protocol? Because a lot of people will do intermittent fasting because they're just looking to lose weight. Some people do a 3 to 4 day. Like what have you seen as far as literature-wise?
Literature-wise, I think that the like 16-8 intermittent fasting is extremely good for regulating everything, but that's more of a like lifestyle, doesn't necessarily promote that DNA repair that we're talking about. The ideal place that I've seen in the literature for promoting DNA repair and destruction of cells that are not up to snuff. I don't know what there's definitely a more scientific word than
that.
But and then they use those cells for energy and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the time period that you're looking to fast in order for that to happen is between like 40 and 48 hours. So the thing that I had heard suggested was doing a 48-hour fast once a month. And I did that for a little while and we want to get back to it. I felt fantastic. I felt fantastic after doing it. The last like 40 hours or the last four
the last
hours, four or
hours
five hours,
so tough.
The last 40 hours are pretty rough. Like I'm used to eating it, you know, the last 4 hours are pretty rough. Because that's whenever, like, it's really weird because whenever you fast for that long, you get waves of hunger whenever you should be eating. Like at lunchtime, you'll start to feel hungry and then it goes away for no reason. You're like, why? I didn't eat though.
Well, your body is used to a certain thing, so it's going to send you a signal. And then after a certain time of not eating breakfast, it's like, I'm not going to waste energy on sending you this signal.
Exactly.
Again. That's why when people are like, oh yeah, my body just got used to not eating, it's like, no, it's tired of telling you to eat. It knows you're not listening, so it's not going to tell you anymore.
That's true. I think it's a little bit of both, that it's just like, well, if we're not getting any food, then screw it. But there's also that, like, I'm convinced that it knows that it doesn't need food yet. But it's telling you that this is what you've been doing, and so right. you should go yeah. do it.
It's just like, hey, we would like you to eat food, and I'm going to spend some energy right. on this hormonal response. And oh, we're not doing that. I am going to save energy on this response, and we're going to let you do you.
Yeah, but like even at the same a different thing. But if you work out every day at 5:30 in the morning, those crazy people that work out in the morning, I don't do that. I may try and switch over, but that's a different story. If you decide not to set your alarm for 5:30, then there are days that you just wake up at 5:30 and you're like, well, yep. time to go work out. And that, you know, that's just your body being like, okay, this is what we've been doing. You definitely don't need to work out to live, but your brain's certainly telling you need to get up for and sure. do it. And I think that at least part of that, you know, the waves of hunger is that your brain being like, well, this is what we've been doing. What are you throwing off my groove?
So what's the kind of eating protocol that you're following nowadays?
So I try to avoid, I don't do okay. gluten. And I try to avoid as much processed sugar as I can. Other than that, like basically what I said before is try to cut out as much ice cream as I can and eat as many like good meals as I can. That's what I do. I went carnivore for about a month and I had some digestive issues before yeah. that. And that cleared things up. And then I was like, yeah, but I really like chocolate and strawberries. So, so I started adding things back in. And whenever I found something that was not okay, that my stomach yeah. didn't agree with, I was like, okay, that's not it. I guess I don't want broccoli anymore. I mean, that I can't eat broccoli, but that's just my example.
Yeah. I've started adding fruits back in and like, everyone's like, oh yeah, but you can eat cheese. But I was like, no, I can't. Like it does
you're right.
not go well. Like my wife, she knows like if I'm going to the bathroom, she's like, you're in there for an extended period of time. What did you eat?
Like, it's the cheese. Yeah. And that was basically how I determined what I eat now is I regressed back to, that sounds like an exercise protocol. I regressed back as far as I could to something that I know yeah. would be sustainable. And that was just meat. I felt good on that, got rid of all the variables and we're just like, okay, this is good. Now what can I add in that's going to be okay? And that's kind of where I've ended up is as little sugar and carbs as I can, but not limiting that. Like if I'm out and I have, you know, a burger that's on a bun, like right. I'm fine with that. But I try to avoid that kind
so
of stuff.
So how do you, it's not a great question for you, but you have a healthy relationship with food. So what is it like when you are talking to yourself and you decide to have something or you decide not to have something?
A lot of that is just, I try not to have that conversation with myself too often, not because I'm not good at having the conversation, but because the more, like if I have Oreos in the house, I'm going to eat those Oreos. But if I don't buy Oreos, I only have to have that conversation mm-hmm. with myself once. So then that's how I do it at the store is, do I really need the Oreos? Like, you know, is that going to make me better at what I want to do? Is it going to wreck my stomach the next day? You know, those types of questions. And most of the time, whenever I'm looking at those things, I'm like, yeah, it tastes good in the moment, but the next day I'll regret it.
So like when you decide to have the burger, what's the conversation? Do you feel positive about that decision you made or?
Honestly, I don't think about it that much because it's, what's the, 80-20 rule. 80% of the time you do what's good for you and like that you know you need to do. 20% of the time you can cheat.
Well, and also that like 20% isn't like a whole box of like fruit roll-ups and
right. It's still yeah. It's not an entire pizza. It's you know.
and I think there's an issue that a lot of people have is if they're going strict on something. And then say perhaps on your birthday dinner you get guac and chips, but you've been just eating meat. And then you're like, oh, well, it's all ruined. I'm going to go get a 20-pack of fruit roll-ups and eat them all.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that happened 10 days ago. but I would say some people that does happen to. So having that conversation is good to have.
Yeah. I think that's the hardest thing is like whenever you have, if you have a regression on whatever it is that you're trying to do, not falling so far back. And that's really hard because it's, like you said, it's already all screwed up. So why not just go for broke?
I'll start again tomorrow. It's 10 o'clock tonight and you're going to ruin this? Absolutely. So what is the physical practice that you have going on right now? So on TikTok, I've really been enjoying it. So what do you got going on?
So I dislocated my shoulder.
Car accident?
I fell playing hockey. I was trying to jump around somebody and fell like onto my shoulder or onto my arm, and it shot my shoulder out the back is what I think happened. Was laying there on the ice and pulled it back in myself. It was a whole thing. But since then, I didn't do a whole lot. I kind of gave it some rest. Did some of my other things that I threw about 30 needles in it in about 2 days to try and help with inflammation and healing and all that kind of stuff. Did some exercises, not super.
So needles is an acupuncture, if people were wondering, right? No?
A little bit different. So this is my favorite thing to tell people. The difference between acupuncture and dry needling. Dry needling is what I did. Is about that much. Acupuncture goes in like just the skin layer, basically. And dry needling is trying to target either muscle or joint space. Okay. But so that means you're like, I wish
no,
that I could,
I've had there. It done.
I've got needles that are, you know, get a 3-inch needle and stick that somewhere. That's a great time. It's dry needling for that, which it helps. It definitely did. But about 2-3 months later, I went, I was trying to rock climb and pulled it out of its socket again. And then I was like, okay, I really need to do something for this, which is how I started crawling. Started out just kind of doing it. It was like a minute a day, and I tried to increase by 1 minute every day until I hit 30, and then I couldn't keep going. Well, I mean, I could now, but I got bored and tired. So now I crawl or do something that's on all fours every day. The big things that I started doing were just bear crawl, and that kind of got boring, and I got up to 30 minutes, and I was like, okay, so now what can I do to make this more enjoyable and more like specific for what I need. So I started doing more like rotational type stuff. Started trying to make it fun. I got these,
the lights. I don't know the name of them, but
the lights,
are you
Blaze
sponsored
pods
by them?
They're called Blaze. No, I'm not. I've tagged them in some of my videos, but they don't. I kind of wish that I was, because they have some cool accessories for them that you can like hang them on the walls and stuff. But yeah. But I started putting their reaction lights to try and get you. Basically, it's more dynamic than just like doing push-ups, for example, or shoulder taps or something like that. And then I started doing that kind of stuff, and I was like, you know what makes this so much more, or it makes it so much more enjoyable that I want to do it. And it's also putting me into a position that's, you know, more advantageous for it's more functional. Like, just like what we were talking about earlier is that, you know, I can't just strengthen the muscles. I have to improve function. And tapping the lights in, you know, however it is that I'm going to be, if it's a push-up position, if it's bear position, if it's, you know, crawling around and trying to hit lights, that all increases motivation, like we were talking about earlier, and is also more functional. So that was how that came about. And so now a lot of my stuff is focused on how can we gamify rehab.
Love that.
Which, like, the hard part about that is that's more of a stage two of rehab than stage one. Like, first you gotta get the movement down, and then you can have fun with it. So that part's a little still something that I'm playing.
Well,
with.
A lot of people, if you tell them the crawl, they just look at you. What? That's what a baby does. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. It's really odd. Like, there's people who have commented on my stuff, or people who have stitched the videos, or people at school who have said, like, why are you doing that? Like, that's so, like, who crawls? I was like, I do. I don't know.
Literally everybody else.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of animals pulling hammies or like having, like, you don't see them holding their arm, or just like, it all works out because they're doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Right. And it's been huge for me in terms of like my shoulders. I'm definitely the strongest in my shoulders that I've ever been. Because I'm doing so much work with them now, where I hated doing like shoulder press was my least favorite exercise. And my goal now is to get a handstand push-up. Like, it's a weird thing, because the thing that I hated the most is now what I want to do.
Freestanding or on a wall? Ooh.
Freestanding.
That's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm about, let's say like 60, 70% of the way there. I can, and one of my like coolest thing that I've done so far is I can go from transitioning from an L sit up into a handstand.
That is quite impressive.
Which is like half of the equation for a handstand push-up. I have to be able to get down as well.
Yeah, I have some gymnast friends that they just whip that out. I'm like, no.
Yeah, like, that's not fair. You know how long I've worked for this? It's like, I know they did too,
like,
but
I do a ring muscle up. Like, yeah, that's a beginner movement for gymnastics. All right. Hardest thing we got at our gym.
Cool.
But
it's
whatever.
Fine.
So where are we going from here? As far as, are you looking to open up your own practice, or you want to keep working where you're at?
I don't know yet. So the end goal is certainly to open up my own practice. Part of the thing is that the style of chiropractic and that style, that rehab-y type style, and incorporating how chiropractic works, and along with that, which isn't, it's hard to find somebody else who practices the same way that I do. The closest guy to me right now is 30, 40 minutes from where I'm currently at. And, you know, if I went back where I'm from, then it puts it like an hour and a half.
Not ideal.
Which, yeah. So opening up something in that regard, opening up something is definitely the way to go. But doing that right out of the gate is kind of tough. And that's also, you know, do I want to stay here? If an opportunity comes up somewhere else, then I probably would go and see, you know, if that's worth it. But that's also a tough decision to make.
Yeah. We don't have to make that now.
Thank God. I got 8 more months until that.
There we go. But to wrap things up, got a couple more questions, but first, where would everyone follow you, if they're not already?
So on basically anywhere, if you search my name, Marshall Gievers with no spaces, that's where I am on TikTok, on Instagram. I don't do a whole lot of posting to Instagram. The stuff that's like more interesting, I post on Instagram. But a lot of my like daily stuff just goes on TikTok. So if you're looking for like continual progress and something like that, follow me on TikTok. If you're looking for more like specific, that's kind of cool, follow me on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, we'll finish up with these last two questions. What's your definition of health? Not necessarily the dictionary definition, but what is health to you?
We're gonna finish up with this.
Oh,
that's a tough one because health is like, I don't want to just say the absence of pain. Obviously, I feel like that's a requirement, but it's an overall sense of well-being. Like my shoulder still dislocates, and so I'm not healthy in that regard, but it's also the most healthy it's ever been. So it's hard to say where I am on that spectrum. I think that part of health is having good function, but it's also like if you could whatever the best function is that you could get for every organ system that you could would be how I'd define it, but that's going to look different for everybody. So it's hard to just like, it's kind of like when we were talking about athleticism earlier, it's hard to pin down and be like, yeah, this is what it looks like. I can tell you what it's not.
So what would you say health is to you?
To me, it's, I want to be able to do, I don't want to be limited in the things that I can do. Like if somebody asks me to go rock climbing tomorrow, then I can go do that. If somebody asks me to go run a 5K, I may not want to do that. We'll see what if I actually do that. I don't like running, but but I can go do it. Like the thing that's limiting me from doing that isn't my physical ability. That's my thing for health and in terms of like physical. But then I also didn't like having my stomach issues and, you know, spending way too much time in the bathroom. You know, that was not a physical thing at all. Like I could still go play hockey, but I didn't like that. So as much as I can eliminate that, that'd be great. And that's not even talking about the whole mental aspect or, you know, all of that we can dive into. Good self-image. Let's go with that.
Part two for sure.
Let's go with that. Is that good self-image is what health is. If you're happy with where you are mentally and physically, then I think you're healthy.
That. And then to finish it up, what's something that somebody listening to the podcast would be able to take away as a positive?
Yeah. As a positive. I think the biggest thing that I like that I try to give to people or tell people is that it's not just from a physical rehab standpoint is it's not just about the strength and it's about coordination of the muscles. And that's a really hard thing to see and like feel the progress on. So one of the biggest things for me that I've done is recording this. Like the reason that I started recording stuff on TikTok wasn't because I wanted to get popular or wanted to have anybody watch it. It was because I wanted to see the progress. I wanted to have somebody else, thank you, TikTok, hold all those videos for me instead of having gigabytes of data on my computer that I have to go through. And record your progress somehow so that you can see it because it doesn't feel like you're making progress.
Awesome. I love that. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.